It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. These are the sounds of a family of otters. They're in a river, some adults with their pups, chattering and playing. And then they start to form sort of a line, a chain of otters, corralling the small fish swimming amongst them.
They herd fish with their pups. They technically corral them because they're often corralling them against a fixed surface like the side of a canal.
This is Philip Johns. He's a biologist and geneticist who studies animal behavior, like those in these otters.
And I think what's going on is the pups are following really simple rules that might go, swim next to mom. If there's a fish in front of me, eat it. And the adults are coordinating things through their vocalizations. So, you know, there's one vocalization that somebody's saying that's like, okay, dive. You know, here we go. And they all dive together. And that's really cool.
Otter behavior is, of course, fascinating. But what's more surprising, perhaps, is where exactly these otters are. Not off the Pacific coast or in North American rivers. These otters are living and thriving in the middle of one of the busiest, most modern cities in the world, Singapore.
It's got this crazy, enormous architecture, and it is kind of a city in a jungle.
A city-state home to 6 million people and all kinds of high-tech companies, all surrounded by trees and waterways. And because of this geography, the city is a mix of steel and glass skyscrapers and wildlife.
Some of that wildlife is extremely charismatic. We have pied hornbills, these birds with really, really large bills. We have things like flying lizards. They're in the genus Draco. We have colugos, which is one of my favorite, these strange nocturnal and gliding mammals. And then there are tons of snakes in Singapore. Some of them are quite beautiful. And I remember when one of my early outings, somebody said, oh yeah, when you walk over there, just keep your eyes open because there's a cobra that hangs out around there. Yesterday, I was walking home and, you know, I walk home between these brand new giant condos. You know, they're over 30 floors high. They're glass and steel. And I look up and there's a white-bellied sea eagle, you know, this very large bird circling one of the condos. And it's just incredible because, you know, it's kind of like this juxtaposition of, you know, nature and modernity.
Which brings us back to the otters that live here too. The Asian small-clawed otter and the more common and larger smooth-coated otter.
This is a really social species of otter. They have multiple broods that live with the dominant pair, the matriarch and the patriarch. And so you might have a family of 20 animals. And this might be, you know, three successive broods of offspring that are still living with the parents.
Harmonious, large families of otters sound lovely. But here's the problem with all these otter families prospering side by side.
They defend territories, and they defend them violently. They fight. And the fights are injurious. You know, otters get hurt. Sometimes otters get killed. It's not pleasant to watch.
Philip remembers one particular beef between two otter families that played out downtown.
And by right downtown, I mean right downtown, at rush hour, the otters would swim toward each other and they're screaming at each other and they're swimming around, they're biting and the water is beat to a froth. And you look on the banks and there are literally thousands, tens of thousands of people who are on their way to work, you know, walking along the banks of the rivers. And it's just incredibly dramatic.
Every day we hear about nations, different groups of people struggling to get along. Humanity seems unable to overcome its differences. But what can we learn from more unusual examples of strange bedfellows? How are different species or provocative scientific ideas, maybe even conflicting emotions, finding ways to live in harmony? Well, today on the show, coexistence. Ideas about what we can do to adapt, make peace with, maybe even find pleasure in conflict. When biologist Philip Johns first arrived in Singapore, he learned that this wasn't the first time that rowdy families of otters had made their home there.
All of this was just incredible to me.
Here he is on the TED stage.
And part of the reason it was incredible to everybody is that the otters were returning after a long absence. So we know that there were otters in Singapore in sometime before the mid-20th century. But then Singapore started to change. It modernized, it started to industrialize, and all of a sudden the waterways got filthy. What happened was they started to fill with sludge, industrial pollution, and dead animals to the point where they stank. And otters live in water. They eat fish in water, and they couldn't eat and live in waterways that were that dirty. So they left. But things changed again. Singapore enacted policies to clean up their waterways, and they were really, really successful. So all of a sudden, instead of having waterways that were filled with filth, we had waterways that were filled with fish. And from the otters' points of view, they were feeding troughs. So they came back. And now we have lots of otters all over Singapore.
How many otters are we talking here? Are we talking like you turn a corner and you look at water and there's an otter there?
Yeah, the otters live in the waterways, and the waterways typically have some kind of park around them. I think they're probably 20 families, and if you're an otter, being an otter is pretty cool in Singapore because, you know, you wake up, you fish, you roll around in the dirt, you play, and then you go back to sleep. And it's,
<That's>
I mean, it's kind of awesome. And so I can be on one side of the river, looking across the river, watching a family of otters do its thing through binoculars or a camera, and they're absolutely unfazed.
So they don't take any mind of you. But I have to ask you, like, if you put in the words otter and Singapore, there's some crazy headlines that come up.
Yeah. So not all the interactions have been benign. There have been a very few incidences where the otters have bitten people. And I think all of those were cases where either somebody was behaving unwisely or where the otters had pups. And when otters have young pups, they become defensive. They're less likely to be sort of sanguine about people getting close to them.
Hmm. Yeah, because I have to say, like, especially the British press seems to love picking up stories like this one.
Fearing for his life.
Man attacked by a pack of otters in a Singapore park, said he thought he was going to die.
Suffered 26 wounds on his buttocks, legs, and fingers while on his usual 6 a.m. walk in Singapore.
That case, as I understand it, was a case where the man was very close to a group of otters, and it was a big family, and another man jogged directly through the group of otters. And in this case, the guy who got bit, it was kind of an innocent bystander, but the otters got confused. You know, it's hard to think of a situation where running through a group of wild animals is acceptable. And the otters aren't small. They can hurt somebody. So that's been one issue, and it has been an issue. And otters also have eaten a lot of fish.
In a private home and killed more than 50 fish.
You know, people keep fish in Singapore. People keep koi, and these koi are large, they're expensive, they're long-lived, they're pets.
These koi have been with us for over 20-plus years.
You know, and when I say expensive, I mean a koi pond might have tens of thousands of dollars of koi in it. You know, those kinds of human-wildlife conflicts are things that we can't kind of sweep away. We have to be realistic about them. But within that context, I think there's room for people and animals to coexist, even in some place that's as urban as Singapore. And so people who might start otter watching because they want to get photographs of cute pups might continue to do other things because they've formed a connection with nature. And we see this all the time, that people care about nature when they form some connection to nature. Whether that connection is to otters, or to a pair of hornbills on campus, or to a bird that visits them on their balcony. We need these personal connections, and we see them all over the place. Singapore has enacted a lot of policies that make these kinds of connections a lot easier. There are over 300 parks and nature reserves. Singapore has a plan that no one should be more than 10 minutes away from some kind of park. One of the effects of this is that people will have more chances to interact with nature, and they'll have more chances to care. I think we're trying to get away from something where nature is over there on the other side of a fence or a wall or something like that. Nature is something that's around us and above us and beside us. And that's true in lots of places, including in cities. So I think this also raises other questions, such as, can cities be wildlife refuges? Is this something that we can protect and maybe foster and grow?
As cities grow and there are more humans on the planet and we spread and take more space, what are some of the lessons that other city dwellers or urban planners can take from how humans and otters are figuring out ways to coexist?
We have to be realistic that we can't accommodate all wildlife, I think. Having said that, we can be remarkably accepting of a lot of wildlife. You know, one of the most amazing things to me was the mountain lion that lived in Griffith Park in Los Angeles for years. And, you know, not everybody is thrilled about it. And there's good reason to be concerned about having a large wild cat living inside the city of Los Angeles. But I think for the most part, people were kind of proud of it. If you go to social media sites of people who have things like camera traps in their backyard, a lot of people are thrilled that they have bobcats periodically in their backyard or that there are coyotes that come and visit in their backyard. And again, there is the potential for human-wildlife conflict. Coyotes eat a lot of cats and dogs. You know, we have to be clear-eyed about that. But I think in many cases, we can make some very modest concessions. And when we do, coexistence is certainly possible, and it's maybe something that can be encouraged. So, you know, that's my hope. It really is kind of wonderful to do things like walk to work and see gliding lizards, seeing lizards that are literally gliding from tree to tree.
So cool.
Right. Uh-huh. You know, just amazing things like this. Or to see, you know, eagles flying among the skyscrapers, you know, just crazy things like that. You know, if familiarity breeds empathy, then I think it helps us to have more familiarity.
That was Philip Johns. He is a biologist and associate professor at the Yale National University of Singapore College. You can watch his full talk at TED.com. On the show today, ideas about coexistence. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. We'll be right back.